Okay, so I want to thank everybody for coming to this forum here. We're going to have two forums tonight. The first is Dane County Circuit Court Judge Branch 12 candidates. The second one will be moderated by Nan Bryan, and that will be the school board candidates. If you guys could please silence your phones during the debate. Please no applause until the end of the forum or the concluding of it. It's going to conclude very timely here at 6:45. There'll be a 5-minute intermission until the next forum. So please stay close to your seats because we'll be getting started promptly at 6:50. The Marine. Okay, let's see, what am I missing? There's candidate lit on the table over here. If you guys after the forum want to look into the candidates more and see their literature. Two candidates here before me today are Judge Marilyn Townsend, union and civil rights lawyer and municipal court judge, and attorney Jill Karofsky, director of Wisconsin's Office of Crime Victim Services. Now, what is the circuit court? I wanted to go through this really quickly because doing my research, that was my question at first, right? Like, what are we electing one of these candidates to do? So the circuit courts have original jurisdiction in all civil and criminal matters within the state. Meaning, for example, if you're getting a divorce, unfortunately, getting sued, issued a traffic violation, or charged with a crime, chances are, but not always, you would be before a circuit court judge. The Dane County Circuit Court is divided into three main divisions. That's civil, criminal, and juvenile. Judges are assigned to a division for a period of 2 years. Branch 12, the branch one of these candidates will be elected to, will preside over criminal cases for at least the first 2 years of their 6-year term, with the possibility of being assigned to another division or staying in that division after their 2-year period. How this forum format's gonna go, we've set up a protocol for the forum. All candidates know what it is. Their answers will be time limited, and Mary here is our timer. There's gonna be a 3-minute opening statement, 2-minute answers for questions, and a 2-minute closing. So with that, we'll get started. So I'm doing a forum, guys, sorry. Introductions.
All right, and we were each given a 3-minute chance to for the introduction. All right, ready, set. Mary is foreman.
It's on.
Okay. I'm Marilyn Townsend. I'm the municipal court judge for the village of Shorewood Hills. I want to be elected circuit court judge to continue the work I have done as a civil rights lawyer for 30 years and a sitting municipal court judge for 5 years. And that is help ensure individuals, including people of color and the poor, get a fair shake in the court system. My legal career began as a lawyer for United Mine Workers in Washington, where I traveled the country appearing in courts in 4 different states and the District of Columbia. When I returned to Wisconsin, that was 30 years ago, I have appeared in all levels of state court, including circuit, appellate, and just a couple months ago, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, as well as federal district court. One of my recent cases is currently pending before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It could impact tens of thousands of workers. I challenged a mean-spirited Scott Walker law to make it more difficult for workers to get unemployment benefits. I won that in the Court of Appeals on behalf of an African-American woman who worked minimum wage at Walgreens. The case is now pending, and a decision could come down any time. My values and judicial philosophy have been shaped by my childhood and by the people of limited means that I've represented as a lawyer. I grew up on a farm in northern Wisconsin, one of 8 children. My parents did not go beyond 8th grade, but they were very proud that all 8 of their children attended college, and 2 of us became lawyers. As a judge in municipal court these past 5 case years, I decide cases both big and small, but I can assure you that no case is small to the individual standing before me and charged with violating the law. The cases involve claims of constitutional violations under the 4th Amendment, drug charges, retail theft, drunk driving, and a variety of traffic offenses. These are not criminal cases as such, they're ordinance violations, but in circuit court, many of them could be written as criminal violations. I want to take a moment to speak about my opponent, a very nice person, but as far as I know, my opponent has not appeared in court as a lawyer since she resigned from the district attorney's office 15 years ago. She will point to her experience in the DA's office as qualifying her to decide cases in circuit court, but I would like to remind the voters that we are not electing a prosecutor, we are electing a judge. Thank you.
We need to refrain from applause. We're just on a limited time schedule here, guys. Sorry.
Oops.
I know the cord.
It's okay. We're good.
You're used to it.
Yeah. We've been tripping over cords for the past few weeks. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jill Karofsky. I'm very happy to be here with you this evening. I'm running for Dane County Judge because in the Dane County criminal justice system, we have some real issues when it comes to racial disparity and access to justice. And I want to use the 25 years experience I have in the criminal justice system to address those issues. I'm a Dane County native. I grew up in Middleton. My first job out of law school was in the Dane County District Attorney's Office. I was an assistant district attorney and then a deputy district attorney. I worked under four DAs from both political parties, and I handled some of the most serious, sensitive, and high-profile cases that came through the door. Every single day I was in court, I was interacting with defendants and victims, and I was interacting with adults and with children. In 2010, I had the opportunity to apply for a job at the Wisconsin Department of Justice and become the state's first Violence Against Women Resource Prosecutor. I chose to apply for that job, and I was fortunate enough to be hired, and I've spent every day in that job helping women and children who were victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. When the chance came to expand the work that I was doing statewide, I jumped at it, and that's how I got the job I have now. Currently, I'm the director of Wisconsin's Office of Crime Victim Services. I work every day to help people who have been victims of crime in this state to make sure they get the services they need and make sure the system is as fair as it can possibly be for everybody. Just a couple weeks ago, I helped a woman who was an immigrant from Africa who was facing deportation and being separated from her children. Why? Because she was the victim of domestic violence and she chose to defend herself against her abuser. Being able to use the legal skills I have to help people and to help to protect the rights of people and to keep families together is part of the nonpartisan work I do every day on behalf of the people of the state of Wisconsin. I'm very proud to have the endorsement of MTI in this race and over 650 individuals, including the last three Democratic governors of the state of Wisconsin, Doyle, Earl, and Schreiber. I have the endorsement of Sheriff Mahoney, District Attorney Ozan, and Scott McDonald, our county clerk, in addition to former County Executive Kathleen Falk. I also have the endorsement of 40 judges, 23 current and former Dane County judges, including Marianne Sumi and Judge Everett Mitchell, the only African-American on the Dane County bench. In his book, Just Mercy, Brian Stevenson wrote, "The true measure of our character is how we treat the poor, the disfavored, the accused, the incarcerated, and the condemned." I chose to have my career in public service. I would note that Judge Paul Higginbotham wrote last year when Everett Mitchell was running for judge, "Everett Mitchell's work as an assistant district attorney is the exact type of experience one needs to take on the role of a circuit court judge. Mitchell has handled hundreds of cases, and it was common for him to walk into a courtroom on any given morning with a stack of 20 folders deep. That's real experience that few attorneys possess, and great preparation to handle the caseload of a circuit court judge." Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you. So first question is going to be from Marilyn here. What is a common misconception about the role of the circuit court in the judicial system?
I will move my stuff. Apologies.
Well, I'm not sure, because everyone has their own opinion about a variety of things, but I think based on the newspaper coverage, a lot of regular individuals in the community think that circuit courts The criminal section only deals with murder, rapes, sexual assaults, when in fact, the criminal court deals with a variety of issues, and those issues have expanded under the current Attorney General, Brad Schimel, who has brought to our criminal courts, he has started prosecuting criminally certain conduct that had previously been treated as with civil penalties. For example, unemployment compensation issues. Those who are accused of fraudulently getting unemployment, they used to have to pay it back, do the civil penalties, indicate remorse. Now, a recent case, of course, where the individual had done all that, he had no criminal record. It was an African American from Milwaukee. Brad Schimel charged him in Dane County Criminal Court with a criminal offense. Now he has a criminal record, and I would say, how does that help our community? I believe in alternatives to charging. I believe in alternatives to incarceration under appropriate circumstances. I know often the big guys get consent decrees and an agreement never to do it again if they pay back the money. But I think at this point in time, you need someone like me with a broad employment background and a sensitivity to how African Americans have been treated to be in court now. Thank you, as judge.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions about criminal court is what you talked about in the beginning, Tyson, and that is which judges preside over which types of cases. There's no mandatory rule in Dane County Court that judges have to hear certain types of cases than the branch in which they are currently in. In fact, there are some judges who have spent their entire career hearing only one type of case. Judge Amy Smith only heard juvenile cases. There are only two judges on the bench right now who are hearing cases different than in 2013. That's important because what Dane County is electing on April 4th is a judge who's going to preside over criminal cases. And I'm the only candidate in this race who has experience in criminal court. Marilyn has never appeared in a criminal case. She has never tried a criminal case. And as a municipal court judge in Sherwood Hill, she's not allowed to preside over criminal cases. I also want to just address one issue. Marilyn and has brought up Attorney General Brad Schimel in this debate and has talked about him in other debates and the fact that I work at the Department of Justice. I just want to make sure that it's no secret to anyone. Brad Schimel knows that I am not a Republican. His predecessor, J.B. Van Hollen, knows I'm not a Republican. Marilyn Townsend knows I'm not a Republican, and now you all know I'm not a Republican. There are a lot of people who work both in state government and at the Department of Justice where the leader is a Republican, and a lot of those, we don't have 74,000 state employees who are all Republicans because Scott Walker is. The Isthmus, when they first wrote about this race, talked about two progressives. And these races are supposed to be nonpartisan. We all want a judiciary that's nonpartisan. We want a judiciary. We want judges who are going to make decisions based on the facts and the laws before them. That is what's most important when we're thinking about electing a judge.
And if you just want to stay up there, Joel, because you'll be answering those questions.
Oh, right.
Second question, how will you use alternative sentencing strategies to reduce incarcerations?
That's a great question, and this is something that I've talked a lot about throughout the campaign. We need more alternatives to incarceration in Dane County. We have some right now. The restorative justice program that we've started in the southern part, the south side of Madison, is for youthful offenders. And we've had, and they get to go to the restorative justice program. So instead of having a conviction on their record, they're able to go and to meet other people and to get some of the help that they need for whatever got them into the criminal justice system in the first place. It is a great way to reduce recidivism and make sure our young people don't have criminal convictions. We also have in Dane County some treatment alternative and diversion programs. We have an OWI court, operating while intoxicated court. We have a drug treatment court. We also have a veterans court. I think we need to expand our specialty courts. We need a mental health court here in Dane County. We also have a veterans court. We need a mental health court here in Dane County. 50% of the individuals in the Dane County Jail suffer from mental health issues. If we had a court that was specializing in mental health, we could have people get the help that they need, address the challenges, and at the end, they wouldn't have a criminal conviction. There cannot possibly be a worse place for people with mental health challenges to be than the Dane County Jail. We incarcerate people and they don't get better. If we use the court system to help them, not only do we help them with the issues that they're facing, but in the end, again, they don't have a criminal conviction, so it's easier for them to get a job, to get education, to get housing, and it also decreases recidivism rates, so it goes to public safety and really, really helps. When judges spearhead these efforts, when judges spearhead treatment alternative and diversion courts, they happen. Judge Flanagan, who was the Branch 12 judge for many, many years, didn't retire from the Dane County bench until he established a veterans court. Today we have a veterans court in Dane County, and but for his efforts and Judge Flanagan spearheading that effort, Judge Flanagan is endorsing me, by the way, we wouldn't have a veterans court in Dane County today.
Sure.
Getting the question, how will you use alternative sentencing strategies to reduce incarcerations?
As I stated originally, I believe in alternatives to charging and alternatives to incarceration. The work that I currently do as a judge in municipal court is very telling. When I have juveniles who come into court charged with retail theft, drug and alcohol issues, I am permitted by my community to look at alternatives to penalizing these children, alternatives to giving them a record. And one of the things I do is I take the plea, I have them do drug and alcohol assessments, follow any treatment, engage in community service, and if they're cooperative, which I have found most of the children to be, then I'm able to dismiss the charges. Many of the things that Jill talked about are recommendations that have been spearheaded by the Dane County Board of Supervisors, chaired by Sharon Corrigan, and issued in a report which came out in 2015 and the second one in 2016. I believe and I support the recommendations, including further mental health treatments, other detailed approaches indicated in that report. Sharon Corrigan has endorsed me as believing that I am the one with my background representing people of color, the poor, for 30 years, best able to understand and implement changes. I've also been endorsed by the chair of the Protection and Judiciary Committee, Paul Rusk, who's also been very involved in this, as well as the former Attorney General, Peg Lautenschlager, former Lieutenant Governor, Barbara Lawton, Fred Risser, Therese Bersow, Chris Taylor, and many others you can find on my website. Thank you.
And actually, Marilyn, you was mistaken. Third question. You have a hearing where one side is represented and the other is not. It's about modifying child placement. What do you do and why?
As a judge in municipal court, most of the individuals who come before me are not represented. The prosecution, the village, is represented. I see myself as making sure the unrepresented individual understands what the law is and understands that what factors the judge considers, and in this case deciding whether or not to modify placement, which is an emotionally charged issue. And I could be sure that both parties feel very strongly about it, and the party with the attorney is able to have their comments screened a little bit, but the person without the attorney may be trying to get everything in, and it's my role as a judge to make sure we educate each side and they know what factors I'm looking at. And then when I make a decision, make sure I convey to them what their arguments were so they know they have been heard, and then make a decision. As a lawyer representing the poor and people of color, I know one of the most upsetting things is to leave, to get a decision and have my client say, "Marilyn, the judge didn't even hear us." And that happened with the case I have in the Supreme Court. Dane County Circuit Court judge said to me, "You lose, and if you want to know why, read the government brief, pages 17 through 21, without even acknowledging that I wrote a reply brief. I appealed.
As someone who has sat next to people in court who are some of the most vulnerable people in the criminal justice system, victims of domestic violence, children of sexual assault, parents who have lost a baby, I know what it's like to be in court with people who aren't represented, people who feel like they don't have a voice. The importance of electing someone who has that background, I don't think I can overstate it. What a judge would need to do in a situation where one party is represented and the other isn't is number one, the judge's most important job is to get the maximum amount of information that you can get in order to make a decision. Obviously, getting information from a well-trained lawyer is not that difficult because lawyers aren't afraid to talk in a courtroom and they're going to give you all the information they think you need to have. So you're going to be able to need to get that information from that party because we have to be fair to both sides. And then you need to turn to the person who's not represented and make sure that their voice is heard. Make sure that you're listening to them and that you're getting the maximum amount of information you can get to make the best decision possible. That takes time, it takes patience, it takes empathy. But that's how you need to handle those situations. We also need to make sure that in situations where people maybe don't where English isn't the first language, that we make sure that we have interpreters that are professional interpreters and we're not asking family members to interpret. We need to make sure that when children are involved, that we're appointing guardian ad litems so that children's voices are also heard in court, because there's no one more vulnerable in the court system than children. If we think it's confusing for us as adults, imagine being a child trying to go through that system. So having a judge who has worked with people with those types of vulnerabilities and who has helped people and understands those vulnerabilities, I think is really important in this race. Am I standing up?
Yes.
I remembered.
Tom, flip the cord out from under.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We don't want to lose any of you.
Fourth question, how will you work to ensure you do not contribute to racial disparity in sentencing?
If you are an African American man in Dane County and you are between the ages of 17 and 25, you have a 1 in 4 chance of being in the Dane County criminal justice system, 25%. That is why I have worked this entire campaign on getting the message out that as a judge, I am going to spearhead efforts to confront racial disparity in the criminal justice system. We need to have more alternatives to incarceration. We need to make sure that judges are out in the community, that they're talking to communities of color, that they're talking to law enforcement and prosecutors and victims groups, and that they're hearing what those folks on the front line are seeing and the solutions that the people on the front line have to offer. I've learned so much in this race just by listening to ideas and issues and solutions that other people think would work in the criminal justice system. When it comes to sentencing, having more options for judges will make a really big difference. If you are a judge and your only option is to incarcerate someone or fine someone, those aren't very good options. But if your options include being able to send being able to help someone through a drug treatment court, being able to help someone through an OWI court or a mental health court, that will go a long way in helping us address these problems. And that is what I want to do. In the Dane County Jail, almost 80% of the people in the Dane County Jail suffer from drug and alcohol issues. We need to expand our drug and alcohol, our drug treatment court and our OWI court, so we can help more people, so when they leave, they're in a better place than where they entered the system, instead of in a worse place, which unfortunately for too many people is what is happening.
How will you work to ensure you do not contribute to racial disparity in sentencing?
How do I ensure that I do not contribute to racial disparity? One of the things I've learned 30 years representing people of color on discrimination issues is how often the folks we're bringing charges against, bringing lawsuits against, believe they do not discriminate. And what has become clear to me from the training I've had all over the United States in the last 30 years on implicit bias, and also just the experiences my clients have had, is that you have to be sure you have checks and balances in place so that folks are not contributing to letting unconscious bias surface. And I think I'm more aware of that than most people because of the folks I've represented and the training I have undergone. But one of the things that's very troubling about the way our criminal courts are being used by Brad Schimmel is that the statistics show that the folks being charged with unemployment crimes are almost 99% from Milwaukee and mostly African American. So, if I was a judge, and again, there's limitations of what a judge can do. I am not the prosecutor. I do not decide what cases are heard. But I can know from this campaign that the community is concerned about incarceration. It's concerned about giving African Americans criminal records in appropriate circumstances where they could be limited. So I would say to Brad Schimmel's attorney generals, I would say, why isn't alternatives to charging being considered here?
Thank you.
Next question. Many social justice advocates have said that plea deals are contributing to over-incarceration. Do you agree?
Absolutely. For a period of years, when I first returned from Washington, I took public defender cases, and I still remember a case of a 12-year-old charged with 2 counts of battery, and the prosecution wanted me to plead him guilty so he could be adjudged a delinquent and sent to Lincoln Hills. I didn't know as much about Lincoln Hills at that point, but I said, no, I've investigated this. You dismiss it. These charges shouldn't have been brought. They refused. They said we were going to try the case, and I worked all weekend preparing for trial. On Monday morning, they said, I'll offer you a plea deal of disorderly conduct. I said, no. Dismiss it. And what they did is dismissed it because I was willing to go to trial. However, I had another case pending with a 17-year-old who had a lot of counts And another assistant DA said to me, you know what, if you want to go to trial on that instead of take this plea bargain, we'll do it and you will regret it. And I had to take a plea bargain in that situation. And I'm advised by defense counsel that things have not changed a great deal since that time, that there's a lot of overcharging going on, and the defendant doesn't want to risk going to trial. So rather than challenging a case, we'll take a plea deal. And one defense counsel said recently, the prosecutor offered him as a plea deal 10 years. He said, that's not a plea deal, that's a jail sentence. But there are a lot of things going on that I think you don't need a former prosecutor as judge here in Dane County right now. You need someone with my background. We have enough former prosecutors as judges.
What we need on the Dane County bench, of course, is people with experience and with the right kind of experience. I've handled 10,000 of the exact same type of case I would handle as a judge. And that's why I feel real confident up here when I talk to you about plea bargains or plea negotiations. It's a difficult question to ask. There are undoubtedly examples where people feel pressured to enter into plea bargains. There are also cases where people are taking responsibility for what they have done. And sometimes they want to enter into a plea negotiation because entering into the plea negotiation means that they get to go into treatment and get the help that they need. So for some people, it can be very unfair. And for some people, it makes sense for them in the disposition that they want to achieve in their case. I agree with Marilyn when she talks about the unemployment case brought by the Department of Justice. I agree that is a case that doesn't belong in the criminal justice system. But hear what her solution is for that case. Her solution is to just question the one case. What I'm offering you is a systematic change. What I'm offering you is a judge who will spearhead more alternatives to incarceration. A judge who's going to touch far more cases than the unemployment, just the unemployment cases that Marilyn's talking about. When you think about electing someone who's had experience in the district attorney's office, one of the things I want to point out are the high number of defense attorneys who are endorsing me. It's an honor to be endorsed by your colleagues, people with whom you've worked, but it's a real honor. It means a lot to be endorsed by people who have sat on the other side of the courtroom from you. And I have some of the most prominent defense attorneys in the city endorsing me, including Steve Hurley, including Tracy Wood and Jessa Nicholson and Nick Gansner, including folks who have run the public defender's office like John Tradewell. Thank you.
Yeah. As a judge, what criteria would you use to waive a minor to adult court for a crime they have allegedly committed?
This is a difficult decision, right? Because minors in the criminal justice system is anyone who's 16 or younger. And when do we decide to move them to the adult system? I want to begin by saying I've thought for a long time, probably ever since the law went into effect, that 17-year-olds should not be considered adults. 18, the line should be at 18. What we know about the brain development of kids and their ability to make good decisions. As the mother of a 16-year-old and 13-year-old, I feel like I'm kind of an expert on this, to be completely honest with all of you. But their brains just haven't developed the way that those of us who are older, the way that our prefrontal cortex has. And that's not a criticism, that's just biology and science, right? So I would say that when we talk about waiving a kid to adult court, we're talking about taking a kid who's 16 years and younger and putting them in the adult court system. As I stand up here right now, it would have to be a very, very extreme case to do that, because The one place I can tell you, there are many places where kids won't succeed well, but the one place probably where a kid is destined to fail is in the adult criminal justice system. They don't have the services for them. When a child is sent to an adult prison, they have to be segregated, which means they are alone all the time because they're not allowed to be in the adult population. They don't have the services or the educational opportunities for them because that's not what they are set up for. And when children have to go to the jail, it's the same thing. They are cut off from the general population, which means they spend most of their day all by themselves. And it is just a complete tragedy and something that we should try, you know, our absolute hardest never have to do.
I think many of us in this room are parents. Jill's a parent, I'm a parent. My children are 21, 25, and 33. The two oldest are boys. And we're just so relieved sometimes when they reach the age of 25, because statistics show that if we could get young people up to 25, our prisons would be empty. And this is a concern, and it would, when it comes to waiving someone into adult court, you can be sure it would not come after many sleepless nights and reviewing of the options and what we had, other options we had to deal with. And I think I've read a lot about this subject, and sometimes there's some literature out there that judges will waive kids into adult court because they feel the pressure of the community and feel the pressure of the community more than they are evaluating the facts and circumstances. Let me tell you, that would not be my situation. I've taken on cases where I've spoken truth to power. I believe strongly in the values I bring, and I'm not afraid to challenge the community and to educate the community based on a decision I make. I have visited Wall Pond. I've taken a two-hour tour with Sheriff Mahoney of the jail. Let me tell you, the jail and Wall Pond, they're places, they are not places for children, and I would never forget that. Thank you.
Last question before closing statements. Both of you have described yourselves as progressives. How will that affect your sentencing decisions?
The question wouldn't change how I think we've already addressed in somewhat sentencing and waiving into adult court. These are all very serious issues that I would approach based on the values, the information I've received over the years, the parameters of the law. But one of the things that's going on now, and a lot of folks may not appreciate it, is so many times people are going to prison, not because the judge gave that long a sentence, but because the judge gave a sentence and then probation afterward for a period of years. And as a result, when someone gets out of prison and they're on probation with various rules, then if they violate those rules, then that can be revoked. Their probation can be revoked, not by a trial with all the procedures and protections that go with the trial, but with an administrative hearing and simply an administrative law judge saying, it would appear you violated your parole. We believe you should go back to prison and serve the rest of your term. So I bring to this a broad understanding of some of the ups and downs that you're dealing with, and also as a student of some of the work that's been done already by our Dane County Board and the various shareholders in the community who have analyzed the problems and have recommended certain considered solutions.
I believe the question was, you both described...
Can I repeat it?
Yeah, would you go?
Sure. Both of you have described yourselves as progressives. How will that affect your sentencing decisions?
Okay, thank you. I agree with Marilyn. We've touched on this a little bit already, so let me add a few words to what I've already said on this issue. I think that the way that progressives look at sentencing in criminal cases is to think about how, at least in my mind, I think about how can we leverage the criminal justice system? How can we use the criminal justice system with all the resources that we put into it to have it help people? I'd like to imagine a criminal justice system where people enter here and they leave here in a better place instead of entering here and leave here in a worse place. And we do that by helping people with whatever got them into the criminal justice system in the first place. Do they have a drug addiction issue? Do they have an alcohol addiction issue? If they're a veteran, are they suffering from PTSD and other things that's causing them to act out in a criminal way? And if we can address those issues, that makes a big difference for people. We can actually help them, and we can have people leave the system in a better place than when they came into it instead of a worse place. I just want to clear up one thing that Marilyn said. A judge could never sentence someone to prison and then probation. The options for judges are either to place someone in prison or place them on probation. And you do that, you're withholding the incarceration and placing them on probation. People can have extended supervision since 2000 at the end of a sentence, but you would never see a sentence where someone is first placed on prison and then probation. And again, I think that that we can stand up here and we can label ourselves however we want, right? We're running in a political race. The important thing is to elect people who are willing to look at things impartially, who are willing to treat everyone who comes before them fairly and equally, and who doesn't have any preconceived notions about who's right or who's wrong when they walk into a courtroom.
So now we're going to get into the closing statements. 2 minutes for each candidate. By a random drawing, Jill will go first and Marilyn will go second.
Again, I'd like to thank you very, very much for coming here tonight and for being so attentive. We're good with time? Okay. it's very exciting for me to be here this evening. As I've talked about, the judge who we elect on April 4th is going to preside over criminal cases, homicides, sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse. They're going to preside over those cases until at least 2019 and probably beyond 2019 based on the current pattern in the Dane County Courthouse. Well, Marilyn has spent her career working in the employment law area, and she has undoubtedly helped people, as she's talked about tonight. Her experience simply isn't in the area of criminal law, and it doesn't make sense to elect someone who has never appeared in criminal court or had a criminal trial or presided over criminal cases to a place where all they are going to preside over are criminal cases. It would be like if you needed to get your knee replaced going to a dentist. It just doesn't make sense. The criminal justice system, the legal system isn't interchangeable. We don't interchange probate lawyers with real estate lawyers. It just does not work that way. And we can't reform a system unless we really, really understand it. We need people who are steeped in the criminal justice system to make the reforms that we really, really need to make here in Dane County. I've been in the system for a long time. I've seen the difference, both good and bad, that judges can make in this system. In my 25 years, I have a deep understanding of what works and what doesn't work. and that makes me uniquely qualified to be part of making the system fairer and more equal for everybody. We face significant challenges here in Dane County, and we've taken concrete steps to address them. We have more work to do. As a Dane County judge, I'm going to work every day to make sure the Dane County court system is as fair as it can be. I'm going to work every day to make sure that justice for all is a reality for people and not just a promise. And I'm going to work every day to make sure the criminal justice system in Dane County works for each and every person in Dane County. I'd be honored to have your vote on April 4th. Thank you.
Thank you. It's just been a pleasure to be here this evening, and I thank Tyler for all the good work he's done, and those were great questions. I think it's important to keep in mind that it's my strong record as someone who is thought to be fair and just that has brought me a broad range of endorsements, and we both, of course, have endorsements. I'm certainly not disrespectful of those that Jill brings, but the unions, by and large, South Central Federation of Labor, which represents an organization of over 99 unions, voted overwhelmingly to endorse me, asked me, gave me individual endorsements, as did SEIU, CWA, United Steelworkers, Sheet Metal Workers, IBW, the stagehands. Those are ones I am very proud to have. They believe, as I believe, that my varied experience is important at this point in the Dane County court system. We have former prosecutors who are currently judges. As Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor said when she was in town a couple months ago, when you're selecting a judge, look at whose experience is not currently represented. When we have one of, frankly, the most partisan attorney generals that we have had in a long time, when he is using our criminal courts to criminalize worker conduct, when I think it's important to have someone as vigilant as me, someone who's been elected three times by my community as municipal court judge, and someone who would be vigilant for our community. So thank you.
Thank you guys for coming and participating in this report.